Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Haunted Japan, Exploring the World of Japanese Yokai, Ghosts and the Paranormal, by Catriann Ross, narrated by Ruth Urquhart. Foreword. Japan is a weird place. I do not mean that in a negative way at all, but in an archaic sense related to the supernatural and the unknown. The roots of Japan's mystery and wonder run deep. There are little gods in every street corner. Monsters lurk in every shadow. There is even a town that has a magical rock that was once the dinner table of fierce oni who ravaged the land in ancient times. And there's another with a bridge haunted by a mysterious ghost that appears with a hunk of konnyaku stuffed into its mouth so that no one can understand what it is saying. The oni no maita of Asuka and the konnyaku no yude of Tenri, respectively. And those are just the common obscura. Look further, and you will find countless other places, such as the mysterious Mount Uzore, whose name translates literally into Mount Fear, which is examined in this book. All this originates in the creation myth of Japan, when the god Izanagi no Mikito, after returning from his sojourn in the underworld, took a bath to wash away the impurities. As he dried himself, his god water soaked into the soil of Japan, infusing the land with latent supernatural potential. Since Japan opened to the West in 1853, when American Commodore Matthew C. Perry's ships arrived at Tokyo Bay, there have been those who were, shall we say, attuned to this supernatural potential, those who embraced it and wrote about it. Percival Lowell, he of the canals on Mars theory, went to Japan in the 1890s. Lau was amazed by the country's practice of spirit possession and mediumship, and he catalogued them in detail in his 1894 book, Occult Japan. Perhaps most famously, Lafcadio Hearn went to Japan in 1890, publishing several books on the mysteries he found, including Glimpses of Unfamiliar Japan, 1894, In Ghostly Japan, 1899, and Kwaidan, Stories and Studies of Strange Things, 1903. I packed several of these books in my suitcase when I boarded a plane for Japan in 2001, along with a quirky little volume by author Catriann Ross called Supernatural and Mysterious Japan, now with the title Haunted Japan, Exploring the World of Japanese Yokai, Ghosts and the Paranormal. Ross made her own entry to Japan in the late 1980s, just before the crash of the bubble era, in a time that is now known as Ushinowarata Junin, the lost decade. As when Lowell and Hearn arrived, Japan was in a liminal place. And this is where the monsters live. Japan was in a time of transition, moving from what it once was to what it would be. Ross would have encountered a world where businessmen carried blessed amulets in their pockets, alongside their portfolio briefings, and where faith healers had an equal part of the public discourse as the latest scientific advances. With this book, she dove right in. While the book covers the Edo period and many of Japan's classic ghosts, there are other topics that stand out. Most similar studies in Japan's supernatural end around the Meiji period. Traditional thinking is that when Japan finally opened to the West after centuries of self-imposed isolation, the country's love affair with the supernatural sputtered out. But that is right when Ross gets started. Most notably, she covers religions created during the Shinshu-kyo, New Religions movement, that followed the lifting of the 260-year religion ban imposed by the Tokugawa shogunate. Corresponding with the Western spiritualism movement, this period saw a spurt of revelations and annunciations among people declaring themselves prophets of new gods. Religions such as Omoto and Tenrikyo were founded. Most of these new religions faded into instant obscurity, but a few spread out across the world and remain vital institutions today. I appreciated this chapter in particular, as I lived in Nara, near Tenri, the Bethlehem for the Tenrikyo religion. No one was able to tell me exactly what was really going on with all the strangely garbed people I occasionally saw wandering the streets, other than they were Tenrikyo practitioners. For me, it was the book's examination of Omoto and the roots of these religious movements that put the significance of these unique groups into perspective. I also appreciate the examination of modern topics in haunted Japan. This book is a plunge into the present as much as into the past. It is to her credit that Ross was curious enough about the country in which she lived to explore not only its past, but also the world around her. As a fellow writer on Strange Japan, I know what a brave move that is. There is a certain professional safety that is afforded when examining ancient supernatural topics in Japan. Write about the yokai encyclopedias of Toriyama Sagien or the phantom visions of the artist Maruyama Okyo, and no one bats an eye. You are not judged for discussing these age-old topics. However, write about something more modern, and you invite skepticism. This is curious given the fact that the supernatural remains a vital part of Japan's cultural landscape. One need look no further than the immensely popular Marie Kondo's animistic approach to decluttering that has exploded in popularity in the West. The magic continues to thrive. Ross chose topics with remarkable prescience. In her explanation of Nensha spirit photography, she discusses the psychic Sadako Takahashi, whose name would become world-famous as the inspiration behind the movie monster Sadako Yamamura from the book and film series Ring. The investigation into Sadako Takahashi's powers is a foundation of the original Koji Suzuki Ring novel. Also, in the chapter New Forays into the Mystic, Ross discusses practitioners of the art of geomancy known as Fuzi, which involves identifying the energy sources of buildings and planning accordingly to maximize their potential. This is a practice with which I am well familiar. The desk I am writing upon has a heavy chain to help ground my career, and our bed is positioned in our room to tap into our home's latent power. Most modern readers will be equally knowledgeable about Fuzi, although perhaps they know it better by the Chinese name Feng Shui. But it was this book where I heard about it first. Haunted Japan would make a good guidebook for legend trippers looking to discover supernatural surprises off the beaten track. Her section, Strange but True, is a wealth of weirdness, exploring things from the little clay astronaut dolls Shakoki Dogu, which are familiar to any viewers of the Ancient Aliens TV series, to the Oyu Stone Circle in Ozuno City, said to be Japan's answer to Stonehenge. The book ranges all over Japan, including caves in Hokkaido with Jomon-era carvings, once thought to be the form of ancient Turkish, but now considered to be much older. Ross examines the town of Ui in Kyoto Prefecture, that has embraced its reputation as the home of the fierce Oni, Shuten Doji, and now operates an Oni museum hosting more than 200 masks of demons from across the world and thousands of books and documents concerning dwellers of the underworld. And in Aomori, we find the grave of Jesus Christ and his brother Isukiri, both said to have escaped crucifixion and traveled to Japan to preach the gospel. This is taken very seriously. In fact, the Sawaguchi family, which claims to be descendants of Jesus, have included an emblem on their family crest that is remarkably similar to a Star of David. Readers may have come across some of Japan's more well-known oddities, like the notoriously haunted Sunshine 60s skyscraper and the cursed grave of Taira Masakado's head in the middle of downtown Tokyo, but Ross gives equal spotlight to the obscure. At the ruins of Hachioji Castle in Hachioji City, there is a pond that is said turns red every year on the anniversary of the day the castle was overrun, and the women of the castle committed suicide by flinging themselves into the moat rather than falling into enemy hands. Suicide seems to be a common theme for hauntings. Ross tells of a Yokohama branch of the Bank of Tokyo haunted by restless spirits of families who killed themselves after the bank refused to loan them money to pay their debts, and an office building in Uchaisai Waicho City haunted by the ghost of an office worker who fell from a window to her death into bushes where her body lay unnoticed for weeks. Ross notes that modern ghost stories have become shorter, less elaborate than their Edo period ancestors. A sinister, complicated murder plot among aristocrats is no longer required. A mere lonely death suffices to taint a building forever. 25 years after it was first published, there are still hidden gems in haunted Japan, stories you will find that are in no other guide to Japan's supernatural. Ross, like Lowell, like Hearn, like, if I may be so bold, myself, shines a light on those mysterious corners of Japan. There's a weird and wonderful world awaiting you there, so long as you are open to it. Zach Davison. Preface. There is always a beginning, and looking back, perhaps the idea behind this book first took hold in February 1993. At that time, I was living in a run-down traditional Japanese-style house I had heard was connected with Kozumi Yakumo, also known as Lafcadio Hearn, 1850 to 1904. Details of this link were hazy, but as a writer, I like to think of this drafty old structure as somehow having inspired that long-dead chronicler of Japan's ghostly and weird. Already I felt sad that I could only be here for a short time, and I hoped I would find another place in the neighbourhood. Although the interior was inconvenient and cold, especially in winter, I had taken this room because the rent was reasonable for central Tokyo. And, what's more, my windows opened out to a large garden filled with birds and sheltering trees. Owned by the adjacent Buddhist temple, the house itself seemed to sit right in the cemetery, and coming home late at night, I was often startled by the wooden markers at graves clattering in the wind like old bones. One morning, I had just pulled shut the wooden gate and turned into the street when I saw a Japanese woman who looked at me intently. We walked silently in the same direction for a few minutes, when suddenly she turned to me and asked in English, "You are living in that old house?" I nodded, and she then explained that the house had been lived in by the Koizumi Yakumo family, and that she personally knew Lafcadio Hearn's grandson and his beautiful wife. She also knew their son, who is now in Matsui Shimane Prefecture, researching his famous great-grandfather. The woman, Shizuko, was also from Matsui, but her father had bought land here in Tokyo some 35 years ago. She seemed delighted to learn I was from Scotland, because 20 years previously she had lived with her husband in London, and among her most precious memories was a journey to Scotland and a visit to the Edinburgh Festival. At the station, she introduced me to a waiting friend, and the three of us boarded the train together. Just before Shizuko got off, she asked me how long I would be staying in the house. I said I would soon be leaving, and while I had arranged the following month's accommodation, after that I did not know where I would stay. Right there and then, she offered me a house belonging to her father, but now used by her niece, who was leaving to live in America for 10 months. If I wanted the house, about an 8-minute walk away from my current home, she would check with her father, and we could talk again that evening. Mulling over our extraordinary encounter, I called her back in the late afternoon, just to make sure it had all been real. She felt exactly the same way, and told me that for some reason she had felt overwhelmingly compelled to talk with me that morning, although I was a complete stranger, and a foreigner as well. Thinking things over, she concluded that the ghost of Lafcadio Hearn had arranged our meeting. And so I moved into a house in the same neighbourhood, a single-storey furnished dwelling with its own garden. On my first day there, a bird, just like the one I had been feeding from my window, perched on my laundry pole and squawked loudly at me. As I had experienced a number of strange happenings in what I named the Koizumi House, the entire incident with Shizuko simply fueled my growing awareness of the hidden currents that move beneath the surface of everyday life. In fact, 1993 turned out to be not only a year of the increasingly mysterious, but also a major personal turning point. By the end of the year, my life had changed dramatically, and my involvement with the supernatural and Japan's world of superpower, as supernatural abilities are often called in Japan, became intense and irrevocable. One evening, I returned to the Koizumi house to find a Japanese man, Abe Yukio, waiting for me at the cemetery. Several months before, he had by chance picked up the telephone when I was calling about renting the house, and we had briefly talked, but not yet met in person. Now he had come to talk with me about Asian medicine, which I was researching for an article. Although we did not have contact again until many months later, when he came to treat my backache, today he and I run a clinic together in Nishihachioji. I am a healer who also gives therapy involving the analysis and adjustment of the patient's flow of ki, the natural energy that fills the entire universe. A former Soto Zen monk, Abe is a specialist in traditional Asian medicine, licensed in Japanese adjustment, acupuncture, and chiropractic. Another eventful encounter, another transforming shift. When I first came to Japan in October 1987, the last thing I expected to research was the supernatural. Like so many foreigners, I had come initially for business reasons. I was an official member of a U.S. State of Arizona economic mission that had come to Asia to open a trade office in Taipei, Taiwan, and had stopped over in Japan almost as an afterthought. From the moment I arrived here, I felt Japan was special for me, a reaction common to many foreigners who tend to instantly like or dislike this apparently westernized Asian nation. I liked Japan enough to know that I wanted to live here, if only to try and unlock the secret of this strong attraction. Once I finally started my research into Japan's supernatural leanings, including a personal exploration of the dimension of ki, I found many new doors opening and all manner of connections being easily and widely made. Being of mystical bent, I am inclined to think that this was as it should be, and that I had stumbled onto what was, for me, the right path. My first efforts began, unlikely as it may seem, at the Ministry of International Trade and Industry, MITI. There, an old friend, Matsu Fuji Tetsuo, then at the Ministry-affiliated Agency of Industrial Science and Technology, helped me set up meetings with ministry officials concerning supernatural research conducted by MITI. If I was surprised to discover MITI's hard-headed bureaucrats investigating the otherworldly, I soon found that at the personal level, the spiritual quest is quite sincere. Thanks to Sunada Yoshisue, then at Japan's new Sunshine Program to develop alternative energy sources and uses, I was invited to join MITI's weekly Kiko class. This, in turn, led to my getting to know the instructor, Nakamura Akira, a lay monk and founder of Toyo Bunka Study Group, who 2 years later has graced this book with his fine sumi-e illustrations. It was at the Agency of Industrial Science and Technology that I was invited to a meeting with Uri Geller, who demonstrated his telepathic talents and, of course, bent a teaspoon, which I still have. I was to meet him again twice that year, and learned that Japanese companies have been using his perceived powers in seeking new business opportunities. In the fall of 1991, I met the decidedly eccentric Masaki Kazumi, who did not look at me when I entered the room, instead averting his gaze as he motioned for me to sit down. He then took his pendulum and a sheet of paper and immediately began analysing my Fuchi pattern, as he calls his divination method. Told many things about myself, I also learned the age at which I would die. Masaki released this potentially upsetting information because he said I had a chance to increase my lifespan by 25 years, provided I make some changes. Before I left his cramped laboratory, where a machine is continuously set up to catch signals from outer space, he presented me with a four-leaf clover, two books, and his para-memory machine. Touted as a brainwave enhancer and entryway to past lives, it gave me an instant headache and has been gathering dust ever since, its promise of insight into past lives unfulfilled. Accompanying Nishino Kozo to his classes at his school in Shibuya, I watched displays of his ki power, which really do have to be seen to be believed. A man of tangibly vital force, despite the fact that he used to smoke 150 cigarettes a day, Nishino appeared at his interview wearing a peach suit with gold buttons, a pink belt, a white sports shirt, and Japanese wooden sandals. Well known and respected in the world of ballet, he has established a school of breathing techniques that is extremely organized and obviously successful, although I had the feeling that his students and instructors, while developing their awareness, are definitely followers rather than future pioneers in the world of ki. But perhaps there is only room for one Nishino. By contrast, Kōrita Masahiro comes across as much quieter, although equally dedicated to helping people realize their ki potential. At one of his regular lectures in Ikebukuro, I watch Kōrita use his hands to heal aches and pains among the attendees. He believes his creation of the super reading system, which greatly enhances speed reading skills, is a practical way to introduce people to the more esoteric philosophy of ki improvement. And I frequently see people doing Kōrita's finger rotation exercises on the train or subway. Abandoning the life of a Buddhist monk for the study of mathematics and then medicine, Kōrita has been involved in a lifelong mystic search. On the very last day of what had been a multi-year mystical training program, he was hit by a car on a mountain road as he was returning home. During the following months spent in hospital, he clearly formulated his way to teach people about ki. Nomura Harihiko, meanwhile, has become a valued friend who regularly shows up at my home with his latest research results. In recent years, some scientists in the West have scathingly referred to proponents of the new physics as neo-Buddhists, as one discovery after another in the realm of physics brings the world of natural science ever closer to the universe of Eastern mysticism. Nomura, who happens to be a practicing Buddhist, as well as a physicist specializing in superconductivity, manages to balance 15-day mystical training fasts with rigorous scientific experiments. Through his efforts and those of his open-minded associates, new and intriguing insights concerning the phenomenal and intimated worlds are continuously being observed. Such work creates a bridge between the known and the unknown. Despite my helpful connections, I found that researching the mysterious and strange in Japan is not always an easy task. Outside of the world of mystics, for whom the mysterious is a part of daily life, most Japanese people are reluctant to discuss the supernatural, either out of superstitious caution, a desire for secrecy, or simple lack of interest. August may be the month to remember the dead and listen to eerie tales, but ghost stories that touch one personally can seem too close for comfort. There is a dearth of information in English concerning Japan and the supernatural. So much of my research involved working with material that first had to be translated from the original Japanese. Since I do not yet read Japanese, most of this necessary translation work was generously undertaken by Abe Yukio. It was a time-consuming task, and of course the possibility for factual errors exists. Anyone who has worked closely with the Japanese language is aware of the frustrations inherent in translation. There is so much vagueness and ambiguity that trying to extract all the facts is very difficult, especially given the subject matter. Details of ghostly hauntings of places seem to be left deliberately vague, leaving much to the reader's imagination. While this may be the mark of a thrilling ghost story, it is not helpful for someone who wants to tell the tale in another language. In addition, many regions in Japan have their own versions of the same story, so it was left up to me to select which details to include. Often, in the end, I decided that it was less important to know exactly when something happened than to accept that the story had become part of Japanese cultural lore and therefore has its own significance. At the same time, it was a pleasure to learn just how much Japanese, like Scots, have always loved ghost stories. As a people, Scots are comfortable with the mystical, and psychic gifts are accepted, particularly among the communities of the Northern Highlands and Islands. In Japan, I did not have to stretch my imagination very far. So many of us in the modern world are cut off from even simple natural experiences like walking in a forest or sitting by a mountain river. In the glass and steel edifices which protect us from the elements, we have forgotten the power of the wind, the strength of water. One of the reasons why I enjoy my present life in Japan is that I have been able to keep such experiences very near to me. I am now living in yet another old house, which has its own well and carp pond, and the vagaries of the weather, such as spectacular summer lightning storms, remind me that I walk in the shadow of Mount Takao. This sacred mountain in western Tokyo, with long-standing supernatural ties, has become a favourite place for ki exercising or mental refreshment. Early one morning I was climbing the path as usual when I heard drumming and strange chanting. In a small cave which serves as a shrine, I saw three women. One was drumming and chanting, the second was leaning against the railing, and the third was kneeling inside the cave, rocking to and fro and moaning. I watched as she emerged to dance around to the beat of the drum, like the sun goddess coming out of the cave in Japan's creation myth. On the way back, I decided to walk down and introduce myself as a Scotch shaman. The drummer grinned broadly and announced she was a Korean shaman and that this was a special ritual to call down the gods for spirit possession. Another morning, with winter frost on the ground, I watched as a young man performed the austere purification ritual under the icy cascade of the Biwataki waterfall. Living in Japan constantly reinforces my perception that the mysterious and the magical shimmer at the edge of our ordinary existence. The extraordinary or the supernatural is within easy reach. When I began looking into the supernatural, I had not planned to write a book, and the proposal from Tuttle was both timely and welcome. On the other hand, I found that writing a book is a major undertaking that requires the help of many people, all of whom I am unable to name. I give especial thanks to Abe Yukio for his patience and translations, to Hans Letts for his generous search for materials in America, to Matsu Fuji Tetsuo for his historical insights and help with photographs and meetings, to Hiyas Yabaraken and Mohamed Rais for revealing meetings and wonderful talks, to Tsunoda Yoshisu and other MITI people for showing me the worlds of Kiko and Akido, and last but not least, to Nakamura Akira, also known by his monk's name, Takoho, for his splendid imagination and sumiye skills. And now a word about my personal history. The oldest of five children, I am the product of the coming together of two very different cultures. I was born in Jakarta, on the Indonesian island of Java, to a Dutch, Indonesian, Indo mother and a Scots father. When I was 4 years old, we returned to live in Scotland, where tales of Scottish ghosts and Indonesian demons became part of our family lore. Thinking about the supernatural was natural. This background, perhaps, has bequeathed me an abiding curiosity and adaptability. In this next step of my life, I am in Nishihachi Oji, running QRQ, a healing centre, and creating a worldwide network of healers, alternative thinkers and futurists. Somehow, for me, the supernatural, superpower, ki, the mystic search, strange coincidences and unlikely happenings have all become part of the same and, for me, essential journey. For the reader unfamiliar with Japan's supernatural, this book should provide a preliminary introduction to the shadowy world that lies beyond Tokyo's hard commercial dazzle. There may be readers who are disappointed that I did not include more, but to cover all was not my intent. As an exploratory journey into otherworldly things in Japan, this book is meant to offer a starting point. I hope readers will enjoy reading its pages as much as I have enjoyed writing them. Introduction. I wrote this book shortly after moving to Japan more than 25 years ago. So this new printing in 2020 is an opportunity to add some thoughts to the original preface, especially as my Japanese sojourn has continued to unfold in so many unexpected ways. Soon after Tuttle first published the first edition of this book in 1996, another major life shift moved me to the mountains of Yamanashi, where I began the seemingly endless task of remaking an early Edo period kominka, left empty for many years. A kominka is a traditional folk house built using wooden post and beam construction, unique to Japan. Joints in the hefty timbers are fitted together without using even one nail, yet the structure can withstand the vagaries of the Japanese climate, including severe earthquakes and annual typhoons. My home is believed to be more than 300 years old, and every moment connects me to Japan's ancient past. Tokyo is a megalopolis attuned to the mandates of modern life, but living in the countryside has allowed me to witness firsthand how rural Japanese people still cherish their traditions. Concerning the dead, for example, there is very matter-of-fact awareness. Almost every household has a family altar in daily use. Candles are lit at the black-and-white photo of the dead relative, with food and prayers offered. Through seeing Obon close up, I have come to appreciate just how...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?